What are we doing? I apologize to Brent right off the bat because this first story might hit a little close to home, so I apologize. Have you heard about a man who was in Southern California who was on his way to work one morning in his brand new BMW when suddenly the big one hit? Now, the big one in California means a major earthquake, and everything began to tremble and everything began to shake under his wheels, and the car was swallowed up by the earth. The man was seriously injured. But as he climbed out of the wreckage, he didn't even notice that his left arm had been cut off at the elbow. Sorry, Brent, even though you still have yours. He just stood there at the side of the road, viewing the wreckage below and crying out, "Oh no, my Beamer, my beautiful Beamer." A man who witnessed the disaster said to him, "How can you be crying about that car? Don't you realize that your arm has been cut off?" The man looked down in horror at his missing limb and said, "Oh no, my Rolex, my beautiful Rolex." Now, unless you've been living in complete isolation for several years, all of us are well aware of how materialistic our society has become. Money has become the driving force behind much of what happens in our daily lives. Dare we suggest that the pursuit of wealth is the new religion in our world? Our daily Bible readings as a society have been replaced by our insatiable appetite to know what the TSX and the Dow Jones, sorry Brent, mutual funds are up to. We no longer know what delayed gratification means. If we want something, we go and get it. And if we don't have the money for it, what do? We put it on credit. I ran across a great quote this week. When someone quipped this, "What on earth will today's younger generation be able to tell their children they did without?" What indeed? For believers, the situation is much more complicated in that we struggle over all kinds of issues of money that our secular brethren don't give a whit about. Questions like, how much is enough? Does God even want me to have money? Can you be wealthy and be spiritual? Should I give all my money away to the poor, or should I give money to the poor at all? Being sincere in our spiritual journey leads us to ask a more important question, lying behind all our other questions about money. What would Jesus do about money? It's a good question. In fact, you might be surprised to learn that in the Bible, Jesus talks about money and possessions a great deal. 16 of his 38 parables deal with how we handle our money and possessions. The Bible offers 500 verses on prayer, 500 or less than 500 on faith, and 2,000 on money and possessions. Since the Bible focuses so much attention on the subject, it is surprising how many misconceptions we have between both faith and wealth abiding together. For example, I've said this to you before many times. You've heard it said, money is the root of all evil. How many have heard that? Oh, yeah. Actually, that's a misquote of the Bible. The Apostle Paul writes in 1 Timothy 6:10, "The love of money is the root of all evil." There's a big difference in those phrases. Money by itself is neither good nor bad. Rather, it's our attitude towards wealth that determines its usefulness and its morality. Another misconception people have is that God somehow needs my money, or the church will fail. First of all, God's not poor. God owns everything. When you give to God, you're not helping him out of a jam. In the Psalms, David quotes God by saying, "I have no need of the bull from your stalls or the goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine and the cattle on 1,000 hills." The third misconception is that having money will make me happy. The problem is that the target of how much I need to be happy, well, it keeps moving, doesn't it? Financial guru Ken Roberts said that when he was making his fortune, he thought $1 million was the magic number that would make him happy and eliminate all his worries. When he became a millionaire, he realized that he needed $5 million to make him happy and to be at peace. When he accumulated $5 million, the target changed to $10 million. And finally, he realized that no amount would ever be enough, and that the peace of mind had to come from something else other than his bank account. The fourth misconception is that if I had enough money, I could do a lot of good. Have you heard that one? Well, it's true that most charities and churches are not in a position to turn down a donation. It's also true that as a church, we have needs superseding our financial obligations. Money doesn't solve social problems. People do. Money doesn't spread the gospel. People do. Giving money, that's a good thing. Jay, don't look at me. But let us understand something. If you want to make an impact in the world, it requires something more than money. It requires your time. And more importantly, it requires your heart. And then there's the misconception out there that God doesn't want me to have any money at all. I've heard that before. Some people teach there's a certain spirituality in being absolutely poor. They often refer to that story of the rich young ruler whom Jesus told to go and sell everything he had and give the money he had to the poor. They use it as proof that Christ calls us to poverty. But Jesus only said that to one man who was obsessed with money. Now, God had other followers that were quite affluent. Did you realize that? In the Old Testament, for example, David was very rich. Job was a rich man until he lost it all, but he got it back, remember? And Abraham, he was a wealthy man too. God doesn't insist that we become poor, but he does insist that we have the right attitude to what we have. So what then is the right attitude towards this thing called money? Well, Jesus said in the end of this parable, watch out. Be on guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of things. Jesus said the greatest danger before us is becoming greedy. If you focus only on stockpiling things for yourself and you neglect your relationship with God and your obligation to others, you will ultimately self-destruct. To maintain a healthy attitude towards money, we must first of all realize that money is not the most important thing in life. It isn't. Did you know that universities are full of students who are in medical and law and MBA programs who are there not because they have a passion for that field, but because they believe their degree will enable them to make a good income? And years later, they find that they're making a great income, but they're dissatisfied with their career. Perhaps you'll remember the remarkable story of Peyton Manning, who decided to play his final year of football at the University of Tennessee rather than enter the NFL draft. And many critics thought that Peyton was crazy to let this great chance pass him by. There are so many uncertainties in football. What if he's injured? Or what if he lost his superstar status? What then? In an ESPN interview, Peyton's agent said the decision could cost him millions of dollars and cause him to be drafted much lower the following year. Peyton's response to all this? These people don't get it. I wouldn't trade my senior year at Tennessee for anything in the world. And by the way, the agent was wrong. Peyton went number one in the next year's draft. People who make career decisions or any life's decision based solely on money often find that decision comes back to haunt them. Money is a miserable master. Jesus said, a man's life does not consist of the abundance of his possession. We also have to learn, you and I, to enjoy and be content with whatever financial blessings we have. The truth is, no matter where we fall on a socioeconomic scale, there are people who are going to be below us and there are going to be people above us. There are too many people who are focused on what they don't have that they lose sight of what they do have. Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 6:9, "It is better to see what you have than to want more. Wanting more is useless, like chasing the wind." Remember again Jesus' warning, be on guard against any kinds of greed. Being goal-oriented doesn't mean you have to be possession-oriented. This leads to another principle Jesus tried to teach his disciples, and in turn, those of us who have committed to following him. We are to have the right attitude about money. It means we have to practice the wonderful gift of generosity to others. In today's parable, the man's sin was not that he was successful. That's not the sin. It was that he was selfish. As a result, his soul was required of him that night, and he never received any of those goods that he had prepared for himself. Jesus said, "This is how it will be for anyone who stores up things for themselves and is not rich towards God." You know, it's no accident that the word miser and miserable are from the same root word. When you try to hang on to everything, you lose the joy of abundance. Kevin Harney tells a lovely little story in his book, Seismic Shift. It's a beautiful little story. There was a little boy who sat on the floor of the church nursery with a red rubber ball in each arm and three Nerf balls clenched on the floor between his pudgy little knees. He was trying to protect all five balls from the other children in the nursery. The problem was he couldn't hold all five balls at the same time, and the ball nearest to his feet was particularly vulnerable to being stolen. So whenever another child showed an interest in playing with one of those balls in the nursery, he snarled to make it clear those toys were not for sharing. Kevin says, "I suppose I should have stepped in and made the little guy give up one or two of the balls, but I was too wrapped up in the drama of it all." For 5 minutes, this little guy growled, postured, and kept the children away from those five balls. Like a hyena hunched over the last scraps of a carcass, this snarling little canine was not in the mood for sharing. And the other kids circled around him for the kill, looking for a way to jump in and snatch a ball without being attacked or bitten. I honestly didn't know whether to laugh or cry at what I was watching. And then it struck me. This little boy wasn't having any fun at all. There was no cheer within 10 yards of this kid. Not only was he unhappy, but all the other kids in that room were also sad. His selfishness had created a black hole that just sucked up all the joy in that nursery. Well, church was over and his parents came to pick him up. And he left the balls behind. I guess the old saying is true, you can't take it with you. The only way to release the grip of materialism in our lives is to learn to give. Most people intend to be generous, but too often we put it off until we can afford it. For most of us, that day may never come because our expenses tend to rise with our income. It's easy for an entire paycheck to be consumed by necessities. If we do not make a concerted effort to start giving, then our procrastination will persist and go on our entire lives. Solomon again in Ecclesiastes writes, "The more you have, the more you spend, right up to the limits of your income. So what is the advantage of wealth except perhaps to watch it as it runs through your fingers?" Jesus is stressing a basic principle of life when he says to us, "The secret of true abundant living is found in giving." Perhaps we put off giving because we don't feel we have much to give. We'll never be able to give like people like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett or others who have made sizable donations, which the media have paid attention to. We might think that way, but Jesus saw it differently, didn't he? One day, Matthew records that Jesus was watching people giving their donations to the temple. And many wealthy individuals made quite a show of giving their gifts to the temple. They created a spectacle of a parade, blowing trumpets and basically shouting out to anyone who cared, "Look at me! Look how generous I am!" In the midst of this circus, a poor widow came who threw into the temple collection trumpets, that's what they were, two small coins, barely worth a penny. Jesus said to his disciples, "This poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They gave out of their wealth, but she gave out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." Jesus is not saying that we should shirk our responsibilities to our family and give everything away. He is saying we should be willing to give until it hurts. C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity wrote, "The only safe rule is to give more money than we can spare. If our charities do not pinch or hamper us, I should say they're too small." The secret to living, my friends, as scary as it seems, is found in giving and sharing. So what would Jesus do about money? It's plain to see his attitude towards money is radically different than the world, maybe even our own. He isn't against having money. He just doesn't want money to have us. The best approach to money, according to Jesus, is to recognize that money is not everything. And recognize that we already have much to be thankful for. And to discover that the secret of living is giving. This will loosen the grip of materialism that it can have on our lives. And this approach will enable us to control our money without money having control over us. So I guess there's just one question left to ask this morning. How big is your barn? And what are you going to do with what you've got it stored in there?